Okay, thank you so much for the opportunity. My name is Vinita. I'm the Deputy Director within the Department of Transport in the Maritime Transport Regulation. To begin my presentation, I think we need to explain that these two conventions are the conventions that are developed and approved by the International Maritime Organization. South Africa, since 1995, has been a member of this organization and currently is also a council member. And therefore, South Africa, for example, with the Transport Award, was part of the process that led to the development and the implementation of this convention. The first one is...
Good work. Kulman Award.
And then,
first of all, let's just acknowledge the mistake and our sincere apologies. The presentation is made to the Select Committee of the National Council of Provinces on Transport.
Yeah, Chairperson, I don't know where the apologies came. We are not saying this for the first time. This is my main concern. And for the mere fact that we don't exist. There was an assessment during the course of this week where we were being assessed and all that. And this was the bonus contention that we are not acknowledged. This house is never. Departments are refusing to do that. As I'm saying, we are not doing this for the first time, and therefore, I might be wrong. I don't know where the apology came in. It can't be a just mistake. No. Unless if we say, you know, we're trying to save face or that, but it's not right. We will accept the apology, but it is not right. I put salt on it. So that it doesn't happen anymore.
I think it's the point that it's not true. I understand the background of if you can remember, you will honorable members, if you remember that there was an article in the British press that speaks of the capacity, understanding, and in our field, start reducing members of the NCOP to a level where you think of access people that cannot think. If you read the access, that's why I'm saying I can understand the element of frustration, because the way it has been structured, it drew a parallel or comparison between the NA and the NCOP, and it created a very bad impression of the NCOP. So I think that such mistakes shouldn't happen because it really does have a given also on the other half of the economy. But as the Reverend was saying, that the apology would be acceptable, of course, to that understanding that we don't.
Chair, can I just repeat just to say, sincerely, this is a very, very sincere mistake. It's a single mistake when we were addressing the previous presentation that was made. It was in no way in trying to disrespect or not to recognize the sensitivity or the importance.
I can't accept that, Chair. I'll tell you that, and I can't accept the apology that senior mistake. The senior mistake will tell me that, yeah, for solely of committee, but of transport, that we are select committee of public service. We are not just a select committee. We are not just a committee on transport. So it's no finger mistake. I really want to disagree with that. And as what has happened in Parliament now, the couple of days and months and weeks, I mean, even up until from Monday onwards and from last week, where committees have blatantly come out, whether it's portfolio committee, select committee, where departments and ministries and, are just taking Parliament or committees just as they are there, they must just approve or we'll give them anything. And I mean, a lot of committees have just approved that and said, go back, fix up your mistake, we are prepared to come back when your mistake is made. But I can't accept this as just saying it's a finger mistake or that it's oversight or anything like that. I'm sorry about that, sir. And I'm, in actual fact, I'm not prepared to sit in a meeting in this nature with presentations for the portfolio committee, not even for the select committee.
Sympathy in no one. If we were not under pressure to deal with this thing, I would have left it. But I take strong exception on this, and I think it's like this. But I'm just here because we are under pressure to deal with this, this quarter. Otherwise, I would have left this. And yeah, I've got other work to do. So there's a total lack of respect for those committees and the work they are doing. We are treated like this.
Yeah.
I never even picked up the transport thing.
Yeah, I didn't perceive it.
But as I said, I'm feeling aggrieved.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairman, much as I also have the same frustration, but one should look at it in this perspective. You look at the familiarity of things, the people presenting the matter before you. I would have understood probably if I had seen this fight before. But I assume, as probably this is a mistake, a recurrence of mistakes that coming from far. I think it would have been enough that we say for the first time, probably the first time in the year, they were not even aware of all these things. You in your own language, nolo nolo wai nolo fal is tupa shapa fa. That's an idiom you will explain.
If I from my part as parliamentary officer can just explain. I did see this legislation sometime last week already. And I from my side I can honestly say I also didn't see this unfortunate oversight of the portfolio committee instead of the select committee. So I missed it when I handed out this legislation to make a copy and make it to the And I'm sure Claudine also didn't notice that. Otherwise we should have, we would have rectified this mistake earlier. So from my side, honestly, I can say it's my oversight actually. The parliament is also doing IDC from this point. To make them aware, please, we've got the wrong committee and the other side. We've got content for the challenge and the other side. So I can also say from my side that
I take the attitude in this conversation that as members of the press that the constitution is the convention that up for us. I don't get a feeling that we are rejecting the situation. But I get a feeling that there is strong understanding and belief that the select committees of the NGOs must be taken care of. And I mean, I can understand going into an official gathering and being referred to as Mr. Zizi and not as Mr. Dow. How not of you said that, yeah, how can I be called with the wrong name? Over and above that, a lot of the
But I was just touching the other slide that deals with the Welfare Mission Sustainable Development in 2002, which was held here in South Africa, whereby there was a call for all nations to take an action at all levels to accelerate the development of measures to address the invasive alien species in the West Coast. And this year, then the IMO Assembly endorsed a decision of the IMO Council to hold a diplomatic conference whereby this ballast water would be discussed and approved. Now, research shows that there are a number of threats that are events that pose a greater threat to the marine environment. One of which is the harmful aquatic organisms. They are not in particular order, but amongst them, ballast water is included. Now, what is expected to member states when they adopt this convention in terms of obligations? As a party, we must give full and complete effect to the provisions of the convention. To prevent, minimize, and eliminate the transfer of harmful aquatic organisms and other things. In as far as this is concerned, South Africa currently is in the process of developing a ballast water management system, which must be approved by the International Maritime Organization. We have already submitted an application to the IMO for this to be approved. Further, a party may individually or jointly take stringent measures consistent with the international law to prevent, reduce, or eliminate transfer of these organisms. And parties are encouraged to encourage the continued development of ballast water management and standards. This is in line with the ballast water management system which we are currently developing. I must also add that it's not being developed by the government as such, but it's a private company that has developing this technology, but because IMO deals with member states, it has to be taken, South Africa must apply to the International Maritime Organization for the company. Now, when we deal with the management of ballast water, we must make sure that whatever steps that we take do not cause a greater danger to the environment or human health, property, and resources. We must always make sure that whenever, for example, the system that we are developing, it must be safe for the sheep, it must be safe for our environment, it must be safe for everybody. We must also make sure that the sheep that fly our flag, to encourage the chiefs and tides fly the flag to avoid uptake of ballast water with potentially harmful aquatic organisms and pathogens. And we must also take effective measures to ensure that chiefs comply with the requirements of the convention. Now let's deal with the control of the transfer of harmful organisms and receptive substances. Obviously, once we agree to the convention, we must develop national policy framework and strategies how we are going to deal with the ballast water management in South Africa, in our ports and in our territorial waters. Now we must also make sure that in our ports and terminals where ships clean their tanks and where they do their repairs, we have adequate reception facilities so that when they do that, the sediments that come from the tanks are well treated and well taken so that they don't end up in the very same environment where we didn't want them to land. But in doing so, we must also make sure that when that is done, we must not cause undue delays to ships because the business of such calls that a ship must come in, do whatever it has to do, and be released to continue its journey. So we must always make sure that we don't cause any undue delay to receive. Now, when these kids come to South Africa, once we have ratified this convention, those kids will be subjected to inspection by our inspectors who are being authorized to demand whether the kids are in compliance with the convention. Normally, kids will be required to have a valid certificate on board, and they would be required to have a black water record book, and maybe even want to sample the water to see if there is any allergen in the ballast tank. In some instances, we may need to do a thorough inspection if we feel that maybe the members of the crew are familiar with all the procedures and board the ship. Now the convention makes it clear that it is prohibited to violate the requirements of the convention. Now, where this is the case, we will be able to take steps other than those specified in the convention. We may want to warn the ship, detain, or even say we expel the ship from coming to our port. Now, some other states may also say to us, we have identified the particular ship to not be complying with the ship, they give us information. Where this is the case as well, we are required to cooperate with those member states and investigate the matter when the ship comes to our waters. Now, the convention also came with a set of regulations which requires that there must be a ballast water management plan. That is, each ship shall have on board a ballast water management plan approved by the administration. And then they must also keep a ballast water record book whose entries shall be kept on board for 3 years. And then it makes provision for ballast water exchange. Obviously, where this happens, it must meet specific requirements where to do the exchange. Whether you do it in port, whether you do it at high speed, or whether you do it at Java Fund. Now, the crew on board the ship must be familiar with ballast water management, and they must also be familiar with the ship ballast water management plan. Now, the regulation also specifies that, as I've already indicated, that we are currently developing a ballast water management system. Now, this system must be developed, must be approved by the relevant administration, as well as the administration in this case would be, in our case, would be the South African Maritime Safety Authority. Once it has been approved by the administration, then it also needs to be approved by the International Maritime Organization. There's a specialized committee that deals with that in the IMO. In terms of the work in progress, I've already alluded to the fact that we took part in the Blue Ballast project, which ultimately led to the adoption of the convention. We also formed at the time the Ballast Water Task Team, which is still functional as we speak. Currently, we have developed a draft ballast water management policy, which is yet to be finalized. And I've already said that we have submitted an application for us to be said our ballast water management system approved by the International Maritime Organization. I must indicate to the members that so far only one ballast water management technology has been approved. all over the world that isn't from Argentina. So if ours is also approved, we'll be one of the first few to be approved. I mean, I'm sorry, it's Norway. That has been approved. We are therefore of the view that we have adequate capacity to disseminate black water since 2002 to present. Obviously, we need to have a legislation that would give effect to the Ballast Economic Convention once it has been approved by all the structures of the government. SAMHSA will administer the Act for the Federal Transport, and the existing personnel will be used for the implementation and will form part of the routine port state control. We therefore would ask the Select Committee of the National Council of Provinces to oppose the acceptance of this convention because it would go a long way in making sure that our diversity and heritage in terms of the marine environment is protected. I thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Yeah. Whatever animal it is.
Okay, I think it's a very good convention. But there's a couple of loopholes here. And as you know, I was long in the shipping business. I work with big ships there. Now the question first of all is the importance of this. If a new vessel comes into port, say a normal Panamax size, between 25,000 dead weight and 100,000 comes in, it normally is in ballast. Because it has to be stable. While it is loading, the ballast the ship from one to the other to ensure that there is no stress on the vessel and the vessel goes down, you know, while loading. They also then discharge ballast while loading. Now, the convention says that this ballast is only talking cleaning of tanks. It doesn't say while it's discharging ballast during the loading of tanks. What happens to that water? How are you going to enforce that? That's my first problem. This is a normal size vessel. You get big vessels up to 210,000 deadweight. That is a lot of water. It's big ships. It's got a lot of ballast. And it normally takes these ballast on at high season. You know, when it hits bad weather, it takes ballast on board to stabilize the vessel. So this water comes anyway. So the enforcement of it, I think is going to me is a problem. How is the department going to enforce it? Then also, who is issuing this certificate? When a vessel comes into port and before it gets its use, they have to give you a safety certificate and health certificate and things. And these were normally issued by agents of Lloyd's in London and some of the PI clubs, the PI clubs. Who is going to issue the certificate and who is going to draw up this management plan? Because not all ships are in good standing. Because you get a lot of traps. They call it traps that are swimming around here. It's called on the spot. They start to quickly to come into force. How are you going to enforce it? And who is issuing the certificate? How sure are we going to be that this certificate this particular species by a competent marine surveyor who we ever sent. So it's just again the enforcement of the conditions itself. Come back here.
Chairperson, I think he, Mr. Van Rooyen, threw some light. I told myself, you don't ask questions of something that you do not know. Now, can somebody tell me what is this water? Why is it in the ship? Is it the ballast, or is it the water that comes into the ship while it sails into the sea, or is it stored there? And then it starts like a car that lifts oil, starts depositing the oil on the road surface and causes danger. What is happening with this thing? And who is this IMO? Is that the International Management Organization?
Okay, I'll start in the other two.
Yeah, I'll call it out.
Okay,
let me name it before. That's also from my own study. Is this ballast water fresh, or is it sealed?
No. Talking from the wrong thing here.
So, in the book of the book, you have to find it. I want to understand. But the other question is that I think you talked about private company that is giving a close attention. But I want to understand. I want to understand why a private company is a private company. As the government, don't we have capacity or are we not developing capacity to show that we need new business? And the third one is, presently, what is happening? The convention was there, presently, are they still coming in?
We do have the artificial seas in Khaoke. That's the problem. Yeah.
The intention is to ensure that the ship is balanced. And to be able to flow with the load that it has. But now the major problem is there are some other countries that have got their own problems in terms of diseases or water. And as this ship moves from one country to the other, filled with this ballast water, the danger is that they might carry some of these things to another country. And South Africa being part of this whole arrangement, or an affected country,
would be part of the development of this process is for us to assist individual assistants to protect us against that movement. And I think that is basically the intention here. How then do we protect our own environment and ensure that this balance water does not come with all the unwanted diseases or whatsoever, carried through this water into our soil and affected our environment. That's how I understand my
May I add something? You know, it's not all teachers who are good to teach. It's not all students who are good to teach. So I was trying to listen to the teacher, I could not grasp. Maybe I'm a bad student. Okay. What is balance? Can you somebody explain so that I'm with you and I go with you? I'm giving it a different interpretation. Balance order is to balance something. But you're talking of balance order.
Let me try and explain.
If the teacher can, you know.
Can I try it from the person that from being who I am, not a technocrat in the marine world, because I know I went through some process trying to also try to understand it, and until they had to say to me, a car uses pressure, they tire pressure and you pump in air, but in the ships it's compulsory that it uses water to balance. So it uses water.
It uses water.
For balance.
In balance.
Uh-huh. Just in as much as a car uses tire, you put in air.
Alignment.
So the ship uses water so that because it travels on water and the flexible, I don't know, I can say it's flexible or fluid, the water is able to move and balance it quite easily. So that was something that enables me to then be able to move forward to the terminology.
Okay,
that's
that.
No.
This is the easy way. It's like a cork on water, a ship. You just on the water, you just put. It's only the weight of the ship itself, and then it's got some bunker oil in it. Sort of stabilized. It's got no balanced water on it. It's like a cork on water. It's unbalanced and it's unstable. So for a big ship, an any size ship, even small fishing vessels, to be stable in the water and not to float like a cork on water, to sink into the water, but it takes a balanced water so that it's stabilized in. Especially if you also get into bad weather, even yacht harbors, they take on water so that it stabilizes and it doesn't float all over the water. So, but because it's mostly cargo ships, when it starts taking on cargo, it has to take out the water because it's got a load line limitation that you can only load up to that level of the. Because also the principle is what type of water, if you fresh water, I think you see deeper the density of the water. But basically the balanced water is to stabilize the ship when it actually going from one port to another port. And to reduce stresses. So these ships are very big. I mean, it can break in half. And then that water is pumped, from one tank to another.
So it means any water can be pumped to be balanced. Yeah. Do they pump their water out somewhere when they load at the tank?
That's the reason of the convention.
It is where diseases can be pumped out into another country.
That's
now apply control measures
so that
diseases are not found to another.
Very good.
Yeah?
Very good.
And then I thought I'm the most stupid student, you know, because I could not understand anything. But I thought I must now ask this.
No, you
haven't. Okay.
I think Shepherdson is the way now things have been explained. Now one understands what is going on. What remains for me now to get the charity? Once we accept this, that we need to be a part of it so that we could probably, if I interpret them on my own way, if anything, unintended consequences of any eventuality, that one ship from wherever it comes from, whether it's nowhere, where, whatever, if it produces our water here, with those depositors, they probably may want to watch them discharge of those ballast water. I don't see in the presentation any penalties if a ship of that nature, it is discovered, because we do have engineers that they can detect that this water that has now, or this ballast water that has been deposited here, it is from a ship. Yeah. Then if any penalties that would be there, that that country or just the owner of the ship, where would be the blame shift at all to safeguard these things? Because I see it's a good thing. We are not going to even hold it back and it is happening and then it's gone, so that we may now get into the control of these words, this ballast water or the balanced water, whatever. That's my
concern, the penalty. You're not doing it. Let me first deal with the question that was raised by the honorable member there. I alluded during the presentation that we have already drafted a policy, a ballast water management policy. In that policy, one of the things that we have said is that our preferred method of dealing with this ballast water management is treatment. That means that if the policy is approved with that at the moment, is that ballast water management South Africa will involve the treatment of ballast water while the water is in the tank, before it is released from the tank. Therefore, well, we view that they will then safeguard to make sure that before that water is even released, for example, the system that is being developed here in South Africa will be retrofitted in the ship. It will treat the ballast water as safely through this machine which they have developed and kill all these organisms before it is released into the environment. So, as much as there are concerns there that we may have, we think that treatment would be the best way to go before water is released. And in terms of the certificates, we will issue certificates for ships that are registered in our flag. In terms of the convention, when they go and sail to other countries, as long as they are valid, the other countries must be able to accept those as valid, because we will have it. But what we have also done, we also signed a memorandum of understanding with other countries in terms of internal port space control. For example, let's say a ship comes from Nigeria. When we have a memorandum of understanding, not just Nigeria, we know that when there is something, when the ship was in Nigeria, we know that they'll have done a thorough inspection into the ship. So when it comes into South Africa, we do know that because it went through Nigerian port, it was inspected. So therefore, that way we are also eliminating unseaworthiness from our water. So we work with other countries as far as that is concerned.
That is the point.
There is enough
to implement such things.
Well, partly those things, but it does provide for cooperation among member states. But we may want to work with other countries in our region to say that when a country has gone through our port in South Africa, when it goes to Senegal, then they will know in terms of that we have inspected the vessel. When it goes there, they know that our authorities here will make sure sure that they inspect the ship, and if it's not found to be compliant, obviously it will not be released to sail.
I understand that, but I say what the convention was one to project.
Okay.
It's my question now.
When we do the inspection, because there are many other conventions that we are party to. Now, when we do the inspection, we will not only focus on ballast contamination. When the surveyor goes onto the ship, they will then make sure that the ship complies with all the legislation and all the conventions that we are party to, so that when it leaves our port here, then it has been inspected, it is safe for it to sail. Because the purpose of this convention is to make sure that it is safe for this ship to sail and it is safe for the environment as well.
So just clarification, before the ship sails from a port, you must get a port clear from the harbor authority. And before you can get that ship, you have to produce certificates. Your registration certificate, your certificate, and your safety certificate. So I assume that this will too be part of the certificate before you can get a clearance from a port, say, say from Maputo to reach its base. If you haven't got a clearance from that, then you cannot enter the port. That's a control. But that's a long-standing maritime thing.
Yeah.
You have to get a good port clearance from the port authority.
Okay, in relation to what is the IMO, we all know that they're the United Nations organization. Now, the United Nations organization has specialized agencies that are designed to deal with specific issues. Now, the IMO is a special... It's an international maritime organization. Now, this is a United Nations agency that deals with maritime matters, to regulate the maritime matters all over the world. There is one for civil aviation, but we are dealing with the International Maritime Organization and shipping matters. I'm not sure that answered all the questions. In terms of the penalties, the convention does say that any violation of the convention is prohibited. And any party may take steps other than those prescribed in the convention to enforce the convention. That means that in our legislation we may want to specify maybe even stringent measures to say we will not tolerate A, B, and C for any ship that violates the convention.
Jefferson, the presenter said we may. That if we are now part of it, if we just don't bring that up front, the other countries or those who are part of it, if these penalties are not put down, if we may, then it might arise in causing a lot of litigation, and we would not arrive to any settlement. But if these are put up front, I think that will help us to sign a treaty that will say, if you violated this, let's specify. What are the penalties? I don't say we do it now, but if we don't take that into account, it's like when you say, in the olden days, you know, cars had reflectors. If you did not have a reflector on the back of your car, you would be arrested. And it changes it, at least you must have one. Now, there are penalties. If you don't have that, that would be this. Now, to say other country may, to me it's a bit loose. We, then we don't know what it is.
No, I think...
Now But the other thing that I wanted to understand, maybe my sense will satisfy me more than I'm telling you, I'm reading it because sometimes. It seems that she's flying a flag to avoid a state of balancing. It's also not clear what it is. Why are they supposed to fly their flag to avoid a state of balancing? Will they not be exposed to being unbalanced? Or what is the feeling?
Maybe just the last one is right. In some sense, it's the third way of dealing with the man. And I take it that South Africa, it's a South African approach. The preferred way of dealing with this question of unwanted balance was to do the list in our court.
Yes. Yes, that is the way our position.
But now, the question that comes to mind is, if then that water is treated, why do you release? Is it necessary that it should be released? It might be a technical issue.
Yes, because like the honourable member said as well, was that water would have been taken to enable the ship to get to a particular point. Now, when it has reached that point, it may well be that it is no longer needs that water because it will then be loading cargo.
So
it now needs to release some water to allow it to take this extra cargo.
That the cargo balances the ship
also.
Yeah. Okay, when the ship came with balanced water, it is empty.
Yeah,
you must say that. It is empty, you know.
Yeah, we need to get that point. I'm not doing the same
thing. Yeah!
Well, it comes in. No, it comes in with cargo. To our port. It offloads. Now, by the time it goes to load again for the next destination, it must release this ballast water.
I think it's either release or
that's not my understanding. Let me try the ship in. They say, the ship comes in ballast, empty, no cargo. And that's why the ballast water. To keep it balanced. When it arrives at the port, now it's going to load. Now it's going to load. They release the balance. Then it loads.
From ICE,
the ship could be coming from anywhere. Now that is the problem, because now when the ship comes from Indonesia and is taking water from Indonesia, and while it's taking that water, it will also take organisms that are indigenous to Indonesia.
What comes up to confuse me now? I'm thinking of this thing in the context of trade. That this ship that comes from Indonesia comes with a product. Come and deliver.
Not always.
Or it can also come just to come and collect.
Yeah.
And leave. It's not going to collect anything balanced.
Sometimes it's not full capacity.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's bringing some load, but it's not full capacity. So it still needs some water.
Okay.
To balance it out. So sometimes it means it has load. If it's not full capacity, it still needs some water.
You must think of it like a sun, okay? Like a sun, okay? Let's say you need 100 units to balance the boat. if cargo makes up 60, you need 40 units per barrel. So if the ship's empty, you need 100 units per barrel. And if it's full up with cargo, you need
no
water. So it's always got to be the right weight at the bottom of the ship to stop it capsizing. So whatever the cargo load is, the water makes up the balance. Is that not true?
Yes.
Okay.
It becomes
soapy. Well, it's not the
GMO. Listen to the thought.
But that only from Basulula now.
This is only how you know me.
In the olden days, the ships had spokes in full balance. And that's how they can find old ships on the bottom of the sea. With a heap of stones. The line of the bottom of the or some cases of iron
I know you forget that you're saying hi, Bambini.
Now it has become clear.
For me, the thing was in the context of change. I was just thinking to myself, in the form of truck. In the truck, you told us what cargo to deliver in Cape Town. It will never come from Cobra Church. It will always come on cargo from Cobra. Drop in Cape Town, reload again, back to hotel. So I think of it in that way. Because after the ship drift into Malaysia, it was used to come and load in South Africa, but now I'm going to tell you follow.
And sometimes you leave Indonesia, go to Nigeria and come down to South Africa. Like the truck, you still go to
other places. That's why it's very difficult to trade. Just you don't necessarily the country exchange exactly the same amount of goods. So sometimes people buy more than they sell, in which case the ship going away will always be less than the ship coming in. Must be that.
Yeah. With a meeting, look.
There is not necessary to ask for the book for the adoption. Or for record purposes. Okay. Then the report is that the Code of Direct Covenant Public Services on the Convention for the Control and Management of Ship Ballard Water and Utilities 2004, Dr. Ballard Water Management Convention. The Select Committee on Public Services, having considered the request for approval by Parliament of the Convention for the Control and Management of Ships, Balance of Water and Settlement 2004, the Treasury recommends that the House Chamber Section 231
is approved
to the convention. Is there any more discussion on the report? Reverend, Honorable Andrew Chakov. Any views, discussion?
You made a shaker.
No, that's fine. Then we'll take it that the
Select
Committee
has approved. Just to mention, I don't know whether I'm blind, you know. I realize, you know, a presentation like this, it will be good if it's numbered. But the numbers might be there, maybe I don't see it. But sometimes it will be good if it is numbered. When I want to refer, I'll say numbers so and so. But my eyes are not good. Maybe it's numbered.
No, there are no questions.
Maybe let's take that. Okay. Then the term for oil producing the partners with oil population 1990 was not too well.
Okay.
I take it that it's the same as the earlier observation.
Yes.
It's been the same, the cover page.
Okay.
Can you start by saying, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Select Committee on Public Services, we now present you the second convention, which is the Convention on Oil Pollution Preparedness, Response and Cooperation of 1990. Over to you, Mr. Chairperson.
Okay, thank you. Now, let's first deal with oil pollution incident in terms of the convention.
I don't know what were you doing before. You are unable to make things very easy. You know, we actually need to get this balance of water. If I didn't ask, you know, I realized that something is wrong. My mind may have grown old. I must say that so that you next time you can make it simple. Listen, the way they were saying it, you know, they make it so simple. That even somebody who has never gone to school will understand what Balazs was saying. Try to simplify, my brother.
Okay.
Maybe it's not you, maybe it's me.
Okay. We're now dealing with the International Convention on Oil Pollution Preparedness, Response and Cooperation. We normally call this one OPRC. It was adopted in 1990.
OPRC.
OPRC, yes. Now, oil pollution in this instance refers to an occurrence or a series of occurrences having the same origin which results or may result in a discharge of oil and which causes or may cause a threat to the marine environment or to the coastline or related interest of one or more states and which requires immediate action or other immediate response. Like with all other conventions, this was also adopted in a diplomatic conference in London by the International Maritime Organization. The purpose of which is to ensure that member states put adequate measures in place so that they are able to respond to all pollution incidents. And where possible, also for member states to cooperate in dealing with all pollution incidents. Obviously, this was a result of the recognition that oil pollution is a big problem in our marine environment. Now, parties to this convention then undertake individually or jointly to take all appropriate measures to prepare for and respond to an oil pollution incident. Now, for South Africa, we feel that this is an important convention because we have a very long coastline, approximately 3,000 kilometers, a lucrative fishing industry which employs a lot of people, and any oil spill could damage these fishing resources and other marine resources, and therefore South Africa must be prepared at all times to deal with marine casualties and oil pollution incidents. Now, there's a provision in the Convention for Oil Pollution Emergency Plans. Each party shall ensure that ships flying its flag have on board a shipboard oil pollution emergency plan, which is consistent with the guidelines developed by the International Maritime Organization.
like when she comes to court, then they will then be subjected to inspection by the authorized officers to make sure that, for example, they have those planes on board. Now, this convention does not only apply to ships, but it also applies to offshore units, seaports, and all handling facilities. Now, there is also provision that deals with all pollution reporting procedures. Now, this requires masters in charge of ships. For the purpose of this presentation, I'll refer to ships, but I must advise them that I'll also be referring to offshore units, seaports as well, because the convention does not only apply to ships. Each party shall require masters in charge of ships to report without delay any event involving discharge or probable discharge of all to the nearest offshore ship. And consulted where the offshore unit is located. It also requires them to instruct maritime inspection vessels or even press aircraft to report any observed event of sea at sea involving discharge of oil or the presence of oil to the competent national authority or the nearest coastal state. There is also an obligation on pilots of civil aircraft also to report any observed event at sea involving a discharge of oil or presence of oil to the nearest coastal state. Now, when we receive a pollution information report that any party may provide us, we will then be required to assess the event to demand if it is an oil pollution incident, and then immediately inform all states whose interests are affected or are likely to be affected by such an incident, and then also provide them with the detailed assessment of that incident, actions that we have taken or we are likely to take to deal with the incident, and any other appropriate information that may be relevant in the incident. We are required to provide it to those affected states. Now, the convention also requires that a party to the convention to establish a national system for responding promptly and effectively to all pollution incidents. Now, this includes, amongst others, a competent national authority with responsibility for all pollution preparedness and response. For example, in South Africa, we already have the South African Maritime Safety Authority that deals with that. It also requires the National Operational Contact Point responsible for receipt and transmission of all pollution reports. We already have the Maritime Rescue Coordination Center based in Cape Town, known as MRCC, that does this work. An authority entitled to act on behalf of the state to request assistance or decide to render assistance required. A country must also have what is called a national contingency plan for preparedness and response. Last year we completed our national contingency plan, and we are hoping that it will be tabled to cabinet for approval. That's very soon. It also requires states to have a minimum level of pre-positioned or field combating equipment commensurate with the risk. What we have in South Africa is that we have a standby shark, it's a ship that we procured from another company here in South Africa. It is located here in Cape Town, but we may decide for it to be anywhere in South Africa, so that when there is a ship that is in distress, we can immediately install that ship to go and assist that particular ship and save lives and property and protect the environment. It's meet Amanda. you just meet a man like that, joint partnership between Meat Marine and like our company. And therefore, each state obviously must always be ready, should be ready to conduct a number of exercises so that when the incident occurs, we are able to respond accordingly. Now, we must also be able to develop detailed plans and communication capabilities for responding to an all-field incident, and also a mechanism to coordinate the response to an all-field incident. The National Contingency Plan is a plan that involves all the role players who would be involved when the field occurs, how to communicate and manage the whole incident so that it does not become a disaster. As the name of the convention suggests as well, that it's also about cooperation among member states. In terms of technical cooperation or providing help when it is needed. Parties are to cooperate and provide advisory services, technical support, equipment for purposes of responding to an all-section incident. When the severity of such an incident so requires upon request of any party affected or likely to be affected. Let's say, for example, Namibia has a problem and they don't have adequate capacity. They then come to South Africa and say, please help us. And then it would be important for us to help them because whatever happens in Namibia could end up negatively impacting on South Africa. So we must cooperate in that regard. But it depends on the availability of our resources as well, whether we're able to help them. Now, when that happens, obviously, it involves the movement of ships from one country to another country, resources and other equipment. We must then make sure that when that happens, if we need to go and assist in Namibia, then because we don't have enough time, at least we must make sure that in terms of customs clearance, all the logistics around getting to another country is done effectively and efficiently so that there is a smooth operation between the two countries. So this measure should also apply equally to expedition movement into, through, and out of this territory of personnel, cargo, materials, and equipment. It is the same thing that you have, the company that you have right now, his mother body is in the Netherlands. If we have a bigger incident in South Africa, they will then go to their mother body in Netherlands to bring all the equipment that they will need to come and deal with the incident here. So we then have an obligation to make sure that when that happens, at least whatever they want to bring in South Africa, they are able to bring speedily without any penalty. OPRC makes provision for technical cooperation for training personnel and for availability of technology, equipment, to conduct research and to facilitate measures to prepare for incidents. That in a nutshell summarizes the convention, and in terms of how ready are we in terms of this, I've already indicated that the South African Maritime Safety Authority is mandated to, in terms of the South African Maritime Safety Authority Act, to deal with, to prevent and combat all pollution emanating from ships. So this would fall under that description. Again, the MRCC as well, if there is a problem at sea, that report is reported to the MRCC, which then goes to the operation manager of SAMHSA, who then gives direction what should be done in order to assist that particular lesson. The MRCC is the Maritime Rescue Coordination Center. It's based here in Cape Town. We have completed the National Contingency Plan. Obviously, this plan is a working plan which will be reviewed from time to time depending on the experience of the we have. Make sure that it achieves what we want it to achieve. We already have the ships that have already earlier to which is based in Cape Town. If there is a problem, you can be kindly instructed to go and assist that particular vessel and then evacuate if it needs to evacuate any people on board and prevent any further environmental damage or tow the vessel if it has to tow a ship to a safe place. We therefore feel that it is also an important convention for us to be part of, and we request the committee to approve it. Thank you.
One thing, I think this is a very important convention that especially for maritime. I thought we were in time, because South Africa has got one of the longest coastlines and one of the best equipped facilities to deal with maritime disasters. I think it is just how many ships has been saved off the coast of South Africa. The other day there was one fishing vessel, I think, in the east coast that was pulled off. And also, what is very important on pollution, the presenter made mention of the fact that aircraft pilots are also on the lookout for pollution at sea. And I think it's not too long ago, than a year, year and a half ago, a ship was caught off the east coast of South Africa discharging oil by a South African pilot. So we are well equipped. We also deal with quite a lot of disasters at sea. Not too long ago, we had a ship in distress off, I think it went far, far south. I can't remember what flag it was flying. But the South African, the ship that he's talking from, Smith Marine, before that was the John Ross, that used to, went worldwide to assist the ships in this place. So, it's an important convention, and I think South Africa is well situated and well resourced to do this. We've been doing it for quite some time. One of the things that I can still remember when I was in the shipping unit, there were two ships that collided off the west coast. The one was the Castillo, something that caught fire. And that was also assisted by the John Rock center. But generally, we're not just talking about big ships. You constantly have some jobs in small vessels in trouble. The other day, they were looking for a yacht that was missing to Mauritius. That's also part of it. We have got the resources and we are well capacitated to deal with it. So I think it's important convention that we need to try. But we are a leading nation in Africa also. And I know in Namibia there was also ships that went to ground there that was full of drafts by South African.
Thank you, Chairman. Chairman and I, this one does not have a problem. It definitely doesn't have a problem. But what worries me, while we talk of pollution, oil spills, I think this is prevalent in our coast, and it causes quite a lot of substantial damage. Maybe fisheries, maybe things, and many other things. I think more and more especially here in Cape Town. Now, why are we now actually partly compliant to OPRC? What prevents us from the full-fledged, not partly compliant?
I think what I'm trying to say here is that... even the nose. Straightforward, we need it.
Any comment?
No, I just wanted to say that, well, I'm saying we're partly compliant because we have taken this step, even though we have not really acceded to the convention. But when we accede to the convention, we can then say we want to, we may even enforce everything that is in the convention through our legislation. So, as much as we have all these things, but we also need to make sure that if we need to amend the legislation or have a federal legislation that deals with this convention, then we will be in full compliance with the convention. But in terms of the measures that the requirements, we have all the institutional framework in place. The only thing that we currently don't have with the convention requires us to have is the original contingency plan, whereby we have a plan that would involve the countries in the region, so that when a big spill occurs, then we are able to pull our resources, and that we would not be able to deal with our own as South Africa. We are able to bring resources from all other countries, and they will then come and assist us. Now, the problem with that is that some of the countries in the region, their state of readiness is not the same as ours. For them to go to a regional route, they would have to have their own national plan before they can even think of a regional plan.
Yes. Chairperson, as I said, this one is simple and straightforward. If we are going to sign, there's no problem. The issue of penalties here, I think, is also important. Now, we talk of something that we learned. If oil is deposited by a vehicle on the road, we charge that particular vehicle. Now, why I'm saying this is because quite a lot of things have happened in our coastline, more especially in the Western Cape, where our pigeons have been plunged into danger, and we cannot lose those animals. Now, even when, because oil does not go down, it just floats. That's why it becomes a danger. And I said, if that ship is, are we now in this place to say that, can we enforce that all ships, I hope they have been, they are being insured, so that when we submit a claim, then a claim is not repudiated.
Yes, there are other laws in South Africa that deal with oil pollution prevention that are enforced by SAMHSA, which is an entity of the Department of Transport. The approach there is that if the polluter pays, where we are able to identify and obtain and prove. But obviously they are also, they must have their own insurance to cover those things. There's another convention that deals with funds, so where in the event the ship doesn't have enough covered insurance to cover for the damage caused, where we can then logically against that fund.
I think there is something that any other matter before Thomas?
No, put that behind us.
Any experience from
Swaziland itself?
Yeah.
Very clean province, too.
Okay.
No oil pollution.
No, that's fine. Then, other members, I was there for this report. As follows, in front of this, they're coming to capital from the convention of oil pollution to capital. Responding Corporation of 1990, in fact, OPR the Select Committee on Public Services will consider the request for approval of the Parliament of the Convention on Oil Pollution Protectors, response
and cooperation of 1990, referred to is recommended under the House in terms of Section 231, Subsection 2 of the Constitution of the Republic approves the said convention. Then it will go to Honorable Congress of Honorable City of Belgium. I will take it then that what I said, both conventions adopted by the the normal process is obvious. I don't think we need a date of the but to place the not for formal adoption by the country.
Okay, thank you very much, and let's hope that in future we will not start a meeting already at our meeting today, but the department will take note of the comments that have been made. And partly, in actual fact, you know, I felt that this is the way we were going for the official from the department, because years ago, we suppose we are in the department as they come to Parliament. So you left off the hook of the fact. We'll deal with that.
That's for information for them, that the both conventions have been programmed, and the oil position is programmed for the 8th of November. And apparently there's a statement that goes to me that the University of Kenya is as the program. And also for the Balad Convention, the 16th of November, it's also to be
able to.
Yeah. So it's also given a statement.
On the general laws
amendment bill. Amendment bill.
Transport general laws amendment bill. That seeks to amend and realize the transport agency now. In the main, it was the question of the functionality of the road agents at the transport agents, the board, the appointment of board, the role of the minister, and blah. And we then had three areas, if not two, that we were quite worried about. As a select committee, because as they were presented to us from the portfolio committee, there was consensus by the portfolio committee of the department. One on the reduction of the lifespan of the board of both of these agencies from 5 to 3, for which we had a problem as a select committee. Secondly, it was the role of Parliament in the appointment of this board that governs the agency. Because in practice, the way it was presented in the amendment, it seeks to take away the role of Parliament in the appointment of board members. And I think as the committee will raise that very subject, they were not happy with that. So we then agreed that because it's a sentence in the 25 piece of legislation that we accepted the presentation and allowed members to then further go and satisfy themselves with the content, and requested the department to go back and relook at the formulation of some of the conceptual errors or issues that were presented to us. And for them then to present those responses today. And we would
not have the presentation from scratch, but we will be expected to just tackle those areas that we had yesterday. I did that by summarizing the background. I don't know if it is enough, because I know that Honorable Kumbu and Reverend were not present in that meeting. So I just thought that for the benefit of you to understand what it is that we are dealing with, in order to flow together what the department is. So can I give over to you to quickly take us through the areas that we identified now?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Members. We thank the committee very much for giving us an opportunity to go back to the department and consult on this. It was very helpful, because it made us just revisit the reasons behind the changes that we currently, or that we're anticipating to have in the various pieces of legislation culminated in the General Laws Amendment Bill. There are two issues that specifically needed attention the last time that we were here, where the issue of the term of the board members that ultimately get appointed into these public entities. And the second one was the issue of, I'll call it transparency, vis-a-vis the parliament, is the participation of parliament in the board appointment process. I'll start with the term of office. At the meeting last, when we were here on the 17th, the feeling of the committee was that the period of 3 years was a bit limited, for lack of a better word, in a sense that the developmental agenda that the public entities are supposed to hold and carry out in terms of service delivery requires members of the board, who are the instruments of government located in those agencies, to ensure that they adequately respond to the challenges that have been placed on their shoulders. And the committee at the time felt that 3 years was too limited, and there was a need to extend that to 5 years. I stand to be guided by the committee on this, but the department and the response to that is that the board members, first of all, the process of appointing the board members, the quality of the members that we end up having on the actual board has been structured in such a way that it gives us people with a limited learning curve, if I may call it that, in that we need people who will just fit into the agency and be able to run with it from the get-go. And the department has given itself a responsibility of ensuring that proper inductions, proper interventions during the course of the board's tenure are arranged in so that we eliminate a situation where board members struggle to grapple with the information and the issues that they have to deal with. And secondly, the suggestion was that it should be a period of 3 years. And it's not a period of 3 years specifically because we think if a person is really bad, then we can get rid of them quickly enough. The minister does have power to intervene during the term, even the 3 years, and to intervene and make sure that they redirect the specific board member or even the board as a whole on the strategic focus of the organization, and make sure that it's always aligned with not only the national objectives but also the strategic direction of the department. And there's a clause in the amendment bill that cases for the extension of that tenure that says a member is allowed to serve the 3 years and then is eligible for a reappointment, which means effectively each member of the board can in fact be appointed for a period of 6 years in total, instead of just 3 years and then be discarded and then somebody else comes in. But we can be guided by the committee on whether 6 years inverted commas vis-a-vis versus 5 years is the route to go. And then on the second issue, that was quite contentious the last time, the issue of consulting Parliament, there was an unfortunately poorly phrased sentence that said the process of consulting Parliament will be done away with, and I'm saying that in inverted commas. We have consulted with both the DG and the Minister on this, and there is a clause on each one of the founding of the principal legislation that essentially requires the minister to consult with the relevant stakeholders before appointing the board, and that is during the shortlisting stage. And to cater for the time period which we were concerned about, the fact that it takes long if information like the nominees have to be brought to the portfolio committee, then back to the department, then follow the other stages. The department is proposing to the committee that the relevant stakeholders that the minister will consult, the act will specifically say that those will include a chairperson of the portfolio committee and the chairperson of the committee from the NCOP. And that will help us tie in with the other clause that was discussed quite at length the last time when we were here as well, which said Parliament will have to be consulted in writing about members of the board that are actually appointed, which means then there is synergy between the two, because initially before there was a concern that if Parliament can't be involved in the actual shortlisting, then what is the point of bringing information to Parliament? It's effectively requesting Parliament to rubber stamp its own decision. So I will request my colleagues to just identify the exact wording of how that particular clause will be slotted in.
I think that's a question from the committee.
The first issue, I'm still not really comfortable with the explanation, because in their own explanation, it seems to me that they are uncomfortable in their own ability, the point that I see, so that is why they are limited to three. So if they make a mistake, they can then get a little bit cheaper. So it seems to me they are preempting that they are going to appoint the wrong people, so to and that is to do with their own ability to appoint the right people. So to make it easier on themselves, when they make this mistake, they say, yeah, but you're only for 3 years, you get rid of me. So I'm comfortable in that explanation. And I still think we must strongly look at the reasons why we get to 5 years and not to 3 years. Because I just get the feeling they're trying for easy way out when they make a mistake in the point of their own.
Chairperson, to me, it is actually the explanation makes sense. I did not have a problem in the past. In that, if we talk of a kindergarten school, you can employ people for a longer time to grapple with the issues. But if you talk of something that you want a juristic person, fit and proper, then you make the true analysis. Then you would employ that person looking at the credentials, because you can make a mistake. You can look at the credentials of the child and say, wow, this person's qualification is the right juristic person, it's a fit and proper person. But if you give him 5 years or 10 years, you sit with that get wood for that person. I think it is easy. I think that's just explanation.
You must withdraw your way.
Oh, okay. Yeah. If it's offensive, it's destroy it. But that would be the difference. You cannot run away from it. Well, that would be the fact that a person with certification does nothing up there. And therefore, the hands are saying it's just a person. Not that I'm insulting the intelligence of the person, but the problematics that we have seen in the past. Once you give a longer period in the tenure of office, even if you want to get rid of that person, that's why we have labor laws and all the many things. It can postpone the whole thing. But if it's a shorter period, you can reemploy that person. You get it. You just refuse. I think to me, make sense. I'll accept that. And also, the second one, where the chairperson of both houses are our representative there. I think it makes sense.
Chairperson or any other
whatever way, but preferably the chairperson, then you can delegate.
power to whoever would be less than going there, and that person will go in that camp of a chair person. So to me, I'll accept it in both ways. It doesn't make that it doesn't draw any ambiguity.
But then all the others
are fine.
Okay.
Yes.
So the shareholder court is going to stand as the...
On the RTMC, because the RTMC is a different one, the shareholders committee is constituted by the minister chairing the committee and all the MECs from the provinces. The change there will be that it will be the minister, the members of the shareholders committee, and the chairperson of parliament, of the two house, of the PPC and the NCC. So that will be the change in the RTMC. But for all the other ones, the change is pretty straightforward. But on the RTMC, it has to be slightly different because the structure of the shareholders committee must be kept, because it the RTMC works mostly in provinces. So MECs must remain in the shortlisting committee as it were.
Implications
of provinces, very serious.
So does that mean that they are changing
We might be saying in the committee that we are adopting what I meant only to find out in actual fact this means that there is. So it's some of the
problems
in the people. I mean, we are saying as a committee, we are adopting the amendment.
You adopted the deal with amendment. With
amendment.
No.
We are accepting the explanation of the 3 years.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
We are accepting the
other one,
the inclusion of
the consultation, which, according to the brief, it is already.
No, it isn't. Then it will have to be amended. Yes, sir.
To the effect that the chairperson of the
Finance
Committee.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe Parliament. Yeah.
Sure, Parliament. And then.
Sorry, Chairperson, may we request indulgence to be specific there, because we would want the chairperson to either be there or to delegate somebody, so that we don't have to bring in the entire committee, because we're trying to run away from that time that we had a problem with initially. So if it's the chairperson, because even if you are in research, which the honourable member pointed out the last time, that the fact that you are in research doesn't mean that you can't be called in. And we feel that it's much easier to actually call in the chairperson or the chairperson's representative to come in at any time when there's a need to do this without delay. Yeah.
So it was that amendment of the
The foundation, not the foundation itself, because we are supposed to be having the SEC meeting in the background. Where are we going to set? Where are we going to set those arrangements? Because so that you know when you adopt that clause, you adopt that clause, those are the ones. Yes.
And the contract
of the church. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
hear from them. I'm not really sure what they're going to do next year. I think my day system. But I'm not sure
take the motion of desirability has been read, has been contained, and blah blah blah, you sign it. We have read it, and we agree. Okay. So we have read it, that's a good come.
You read it last
time. You read it last time. No. And we read it. It doesn't matter, we read it now.
No, you didn't. I was about to.
No, you have read it.
I was about to read it.
Yeah, you have read it now.
Then, who wants it? Then, contempt.
Yeah.
So, it's taken as not having.
No, we now have read. Just read. You say, you have it. So what point do we try to analyze
that? No, but somebody was taken as a supporter.
Exactly. You still have one last name or position. If I move out now, then you don't have any last name.
You just say inside what
position. No, we are all babies. We don't need to put that in there. If you move out,
no.
You have to stay here and walk out.
Well, no. Not unless you are able to tell me exactly where you tend to be positioned. Should we have an opposition?
Well, you always have this debate that is in the motion of desirability. We did not read it and we did not agree with it, whatever it's contended, it is not what we have done.
Well,
we
can
That one will deal with the substitution for subsection 2. Subsection 2 of section 5 in the Personal Act is not amended. So we're amending this to substitute subsection 2 of the same subsection. And subsection 2, section 5 is on page 421 of the Personal Act. 421. Of the Principal Act, if you have one, that's fine, I'm going to read it. Subsection 2 in the Principal Act, yeah, the Principal Act. 3, the minister must, after consulting the relevant stakeholders, appoint the members of the board consisting of agencies. But then we're going to insert the after consulting with the relevant stakeholders and the chairpersons of the selection portfolio committee on transport. Appoint the members of the board consisting of. So that is the amendment that we're taking the department is doing. That a new paragraph is, yes. Yeah.
Not this question.
The committee. The committee.
I guess I don't have a personal number.
Thank you, my friend. And all those amendments have been affected to all these limitations within the appointment of the committee. So the committee. The department, with on instructions of the committee, have suggested this amendment. As instructed by the committee, we proposed the amendment as instructed by the committee. We were instructed by the committee to instruct this amendment. Isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. So we proposed the amendment. We formulated the amendment as instructed by the committee. So we have a new paragraph A in Clause 1, but the formal final amendment is of the participants in the office, and then we're going to have a C and a D. And afterwards, they will be given to the NA for reconsideration. So what's going to happen now? The committee, the select committee, will adopt the bill, will pass the bill, start the two amendments. That's going to happen. So the next one will be on the clause 7 of the bill. Page 5. Clause 7. Here we're having clause 7, we're having paragraph A, B, C. Before paragraph C, between paragraph B and C, we're going to insert a new C that will deal with the substitution for subsection 4. So, in the bill on page 5, clause 7, we're inserting a new paragraph 3. The existing paragraph C will become D and D becomes E. The new paragraph C on clause 7 will read by the substitution in subsection 3 for paragraph A of the following paragraph. I'm looking in the principal text, subsection 3, paragraph A. That's the one that was substituted for. And it reads, paragraph A are appointed by the minister from a list of names of persons. So here, we're going to insert are appointed by the minister after consultation with the chairperson of the portfolio committee. That's the part we're going to insert. The next one is clause 14. Clause 14, page 7. It's paragraph. It's got the paragraph C there. Page 7, clause 14, paragraph C, and it reads in the bill. The substitution for subsection 3 of the current subsection. But the 3A and it reads, the members of the board contemplated in subsection 2A and E are appointed by the minister. Now there is a new insertion, appointed by the minister after consulting with the chairperson of the select control committee on transport. That's the amendment. The next one is on clause 18. Page 8 of the bill. Clause 18. That is Transport Action Tribunal Act. We are going to insert a new paragraph A. A new paragraph A that is going to substitute subsection 1 of the principal act. Principal Act subsection 1 is the one that we are going to amend and insert in the bill. It reads from the Principal Act, the tribunal consists of not more than 9, but not more than but not less than 5 members appointed by the minister. After consultation with the After consultation with every member of the executive council in every forum, responsible for road transport matters, and the chairpersons of the selection portfolio committee. So you are involved here in the appointment nomination process. So the tribunal will consist of these members of these people appointed by the minister after consulting with the committee and the selection portfolio committee.
Chairperson, probably in order to avoid the redundancy of the city, where there was an omission of the chairperson of the selection and portfolio committee, it would be inserted. I think that's what they're going to do. So, because they are leaving the same thing, then the amendment is the two chairpersons. Yeah, that's what I say.
But they were not inserted. It's only one at whereby they want the consultation.
Oh, okay.
Others they will not.
The amendment is that you now include those.
Yes, in other acts as well.
For you. It includes them.
So we stand on clause 18.
Are we going to
the next one is on page 9, clause 22. Page 22, clause 22, amendment section 8 of the Act of 1999, paragraph 8, the substitution for subsection 1 of the following subsection. There, this is what I was talking about, where the committee, the parliament was involved in the substitution process. And this is what the department has done. They've done away with the involvement of the committee, hence we suggested that it should be brought back and it should be applied to us. Yes. Here, what we've done is the same thing in sub 1. The shareholders committee may, subject to subsection 2, and after consulting with the chairperson of the select and portfolio committee, establish a board of corporate consisting of ABC. So you are involved in that. And the last one, chapter 6, is on page 10. Page 10, clause 23. You're going to insert a new paragraph A there. That is going to substitute subsection 4 from the principal act. If you read the principal act, subsection 4, if you read subsection 4, the members of the board are appointed by the minister. So we are going to insert appointed by the minister after consulting with the chairperson from the selection from the committee. That is all.
That in the opinion of the committee, legislation is desired to amend the transport agency's general laws amendment bill and to provide for measures connected therewith and that the bill referred to the committee to take an explanation. You have a move on that.
You've got it.
For the motion. Then the report. The report of the Select Committee on Public Services and the Transport Agency's General Laws Amendment National Assembly Section 5, dated 24 October 2007. The
Select Committee on Public Services, having considered the subject of the transportation to general laws of amendment D27, D2007, National Assembly Section 5, that each reform the bill with proposed amendment as follows, then all those amendments that you have. Any move?
Were
you confused?
I was waiting for the amendment.
Oh, okay. Okay. So then, honorable members, the department, thank you very much, and we'll see you in the chat. Sandra,